Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen,
the Traveling Culturati, exploring the style and culture of travel with travel pro Javon Harley.
You're listening to the Traveling Culturati exclusively on HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm your host and travel pro, Javon Harley. Visit the website, travelingculturati.com. Travel blogger Morel Howard is guest hosting with me today, and we're mixing business with pleasure, carving some time out of your business trip for a little pleasure, and managing that working vacation. That's what we're talking about today. Also, I've got Javon's Travel Minute, the question of the week, and the culture report. But right now, I've got some travel news. Border crossing in Europe may soon get complicated. It appears that there may soon be delays to the easy migration in the Schengen area of Western Europe. The Schengen area is comprised of 26 countries that have agreed to allow free movement of their citizens within the area as a single country. Of the 26 countries bound by the Schengen Agreement, 22 are part of the EU and the other 4 are part of the EFTA. The Schengen has a no-must, no-fuss border system that doesn't have delays and border formalities. There's a treaty agreement in place for Schengen to have free movement of goods and people, which means that in this area, everything is supposed to flow smoothly. This may no longer be the case due to threats of terrorists and migrants crossing the borders. For the next 2 years, Norway, Austria, France, Germany, and Sweden are under strict border checks. So if you're going to Europe soon, allow yourself extra travel time for unexpected delays like flight connections, passport control, and any other unforeseen issues that might occur. Ghana is about to make travel in Africa a lot easier for Africans. On March 6th, Ghana celebrated its 59th year of independence, and John Dramani Mahama, the country's president, came bearing gifts. During his speech, Mahama announced that the country will begin to offer visas on arrival to citizens of all 54 African Union member states starting in July. Ghana's new visa policy is big news in Africa, where according to the African Development Bank, only 25% of the countries offer visas on arrival to nationals of other African nations. Think of it another way. It's currently easier for Americans to travel within the continent than it is for Africans. There's a new bill that lets airlines display deceiving fares. This is a follow-up to two stories that we've covered in the past. The first, the House accepted an amendment from Congressman Carlos Curbelo that brings the Anti-Consumer Transparent Airfares Act proposal back to life. That's the provision that would allow airlines to omit taxes and fees from their advertised prices and first screen fare postings. This means that the low fares you see will not be inclusive of all taxes and fees. The story we did on the U.S. Congress allocating minimum standard airline seat sizes, Congress also rejected an amendment from Congressman Steve Cohen that would potentially require the FAA to set minimum standards of airline seat spacing. The purpose was to assure that the airline passengers could, one, safely exit a survivable crash in an airplane with the tightest allowable seating within the requisite 90-second interval, and two, avoid risks of deep vein thrombosis resulting from being forced to sit in undersized seats for extended periods of time. That's score 2 for the airlines, nil for consumers. JetBlue shakes up pilot hiring by training them from scratch. JetBlue Airways Corp., breaking with historical practices of other U.S. airlines, plans to recruit potential pilots with no experience and provide its own training under a proposal awaiting approval from federal regulators. The program would be the first of its kind in the United States and would be similar to those used by some European and Asian carriers. Candidates still would have to meet U.S. requirements, including 1,500 hours of flight experience to be certified as commercial airline pilots. JetBlue crafted its plan to gain access to a broader group of candidates to oversee their training from the start and expose them earlier to being part of a crew on large aircraft. Dubbed Gateway 7, the initiative is being targeted for introduction on a trial basis in 2016 and will initially involve only a small percentage of recruits. The program is designed to accommodate prospective trainees with little to no aviation experience, but who pass a rigorous selection process. JetBlue is focused initially only on pilots for its 100-seat Embraer SAE-190 jets. McGraw, a representative for the airline, said that after the trial period, the airline will evaluate whether to extend the program, possibly to the larger Airbus Group SE aircraft that make up more than two-thirds of its 211-plane fleet. They carry at least 150 passengers. Major U.S. carriers have long relied on bringing in pilots with the minimum flight hours typically amassed in military aircraft or by working as a civilian instructor before snagging a regional airline job. Either way, pilots would begin in small aircraft and gradually work up to faster, more sophisticated multi-engine models. Longer airport security lines may be here to stay. If you think you're waiting longer in security lines at the airport, you're absolutely right. And the Transportation Security Administration said you might just have to get used to it. Across the country, long lines and frustrated passengers have stacked up at airport security checkpoints. Airlines have been warning passengers about longer waits online. Travelers in Minneapolis and Atlanta have responded with angry remarks and tweets. What we've seen is a 10.5% increase in travel since 2011. Senator Amy Klobuchar said that the record number of passengers traveling this year reflects a national trend, while at the same time, nationally, the number of TSA screeners is down 15% since 2011. TSA Administrator Peter Neffinger told Congress last week that the agency is taking steps to do more with less. We are rethinking how we invest in technology and are partnering with several airlines and airports to develop in the near future a dramatically improved passenger screening environment in a couple of key airports. But as we reported in the past, Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport said they are considering replacing TSA screeners with private security workers. The GM stated in a recent letter to the head of TSA, the airport is dreading the outcome of summer 2016. New York's new World Trade Center hub is dubbed an architectural marvel. 12 years after the project began, the nearly $4 billion World Trade Center transportation hub, which is a station for the PATH train between New York and New Jersey, and eventually 11 other subway lines, has finally opened in Lower Manhattan. Its centerpiece is the Santiago Calatrava designed Oculus, which opened to the first public visitors this week. While construction workers continue to fill the main hub with a chorus of hammers and drills preparing for the arrival of the 125 stores that will line its sides, you can now join the throngs of tourists and locals snapping selfies and Instagramming away under the impressive steel ribs converging 160 feet above a white marble floor to form this futuristic People's Cathedral. Even if you're not planning to take the train, you should visit this remarkable new site. It's a powerful place to stand. 15 years after the 9/11 attacks changed the area forever, look up at the American flag suspended above. Calatrava calls this space his gift to the city, and you can see why. Cruise is delayed after a woman suffers an injury. Wait for it. From a champagne cork. Now, how quirky is this? A woman who was supposed to be going on a cruise ended up going to a Miami hospital instead. The Royal Caribbean's Independence of the Seas cruise was just about to leave the port when a passenger was hit in the eye by a champagne cork. I guess she didn't see it coming. She had to be removed from the ship by emergency officials and taken to an eye specialist. The cruise line spokeswoman said that they wish the woman a speedy recovery. Are airlines overtaxed? Well, as the U.S. Federal Aviation Administration authorization process is underway in the U.S. Congress, airlines continue to push the storyline that they are brutally regulated and brutally overtaxed and are treated differently than other industries. Airlines fight hammer and tongs for any increase in passenger facility charges, with grossly misleading claims, while the competition gap between U.S. airports and modern foreign airports widen, and U.S. airlines offer no coherent alternative with respect to financing FAA operations and investment programs. To reach the U.S. government's stated goal of 100 million annual tourists by 2021, we not only need new entry and expansion by foreign airlines to bring visitors here, but we need modern, customer service-oriented, and efficient airports. If airlines have their way on PFC issue, they will do for the airport experience what they have done to the cabin experience. Eventually, just as some U.S. airlines whine about competing with foreign carriers that offer lower fares, newer airplanes, faster connections, more destinations, and superior customer service, they will complain about government-subsidized, modern, and customer-focused foreign airports, all the while operating in what many industry observers contend is the most heavily and longest-subsidized airline industry on the planet. This guy gained the airline industry. Now he never has to pay for a flight again. Although it isn't an easy task, Scott Keyes has found a way to travel for little to nothing at all. He takes advantage of his credit card rewards and online deals and uses the rewards towards traveling. Some of his trips include securing his frequent flyer miles or points, volunteering to get bumped from a flight that is too full, and letting the airlines know when there's a problem with his flight. Award wallet and a detailed spreadsheet helps him to track his credit card points and miles. Keyes gained free food, drinks, Wi-Fi, and free spa services, along with a shower suite in the airport courtesy of his American Express rewards. Keyes also credits websites like Airfare Watchdog and The Flight Deal to help him find cheap flights. However, you have to be flexible when shopping for a cheap flight, says Keyes. This includes long layovers. Well, that's all the news I have for you today. Make sure you stay tuned for Javon's Travel Minute, Mixing Business with Pleasure, and the Question of the Week. I'm Javon Harley, and this is the Traveling Culturati, exclusively on HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. Javon Harley here, your travel pro and host of Traveling Culturati, with the top reasons to visit Ghana: history, friendly people, Ghanaian hospitality, and unsurpassed natural beauty. Ghana has it all, but the top reason to visit Ghana is to join me and Advantage International. The wait is over. The dates are set. Join us in Ghana September 8th through the 16th. We'll start in the capital city of Accra and visit the W.E.B. Du Bois Center for Pan-African Culture. We'll follow the history of the slave trade and visit the infamous forts, castles, and slave dungeons on the Elmina and Cape Coast, September 8th through the 16th. Fly South African Airways, Africa's most awarded airline, nonstop from Washington, D.C., and stay in deluxe accommodations. Go to advantage-intl.com for complete details. That's advantage-intl.com. See you on the plane. Welcome back to the Traveling Culturati. I'm your host and travel pro, Javon Harley. Traveling Culturati, the style and culture of travel, exclusively on HUR Voices.
And now, Javon's Travel Minute.
With the current changes to the passport limiting the number of pages you can get and not allowing additional pages, frequent travelers may want to consider a second passport. Yes, you can legally hold two valid passports. The State Department typically limits citizens to one valid U.S. passport at a time. However, there are exceptions. To apply for a second valid passport, you'll need to complete the proper application forms, along with a letter explaining your need for a second passport and a statement agreeing to immediately report the loss of either passport. It's important to know a few things, too. You'll also need to submit your previously issued valid, undamaged passport, two identical passport photos, and, of course, payment for passport fees. The second passport is a request and is evaluated on a case-by-case basis for approval and is typically valid for 2 years and cannot be extended. This is Javon, and that was your Travel Minute. Joining me today is pre- and post-travel tips travel blogger, Morel Howard, and we're mixing business with pleasure. If you're traveling for business and you want to have that little pleasure or extend it into a vacation, or if you're on vacation and have to do a little work, you're going to want to know how to manage and balance your time. After all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. You've heard that saying before.
I have.
It was a little scary when it was delivered before.
I love it. Jack the dull boy, yes.
Yeah.
And our case, Jill's, too.
Yeah, Jax and Jill. Although Jill wasn't in the movie.
Right, you're right.
Now, Morel, with anything, there has to be pre-planning. So if you're traveling for business, you want to mix in some pleasure or you want to take a vacation, what should you do before the trip?
The first thing that you should do prior to your trip, check and see about your company's travel policy. Sometimes you can travel for work and then your company will let you extend your trip. But that's the most important thing. Confirm that your company has a leisure travel policy for its employees while you're traveling on business. Sometimes they're a little apprehensive or on the fence about it because some of them don't have that policy in place, but you can always let them know that you're not using any extra company resources while you're on your trip or ordinarily outside of business for pleasure, and it's a perfect opportunity for you to enjoy some leisure time while you're on your company's dime.
Yeah, it really is, and I guess you also have to know what that schedule is going to be to see what kind of downtime or free time you're going to have.
That is true. That is true. For example, one time I was working with a client and we were in the Bahamas and they had a leisure travel policy where I was able to bring someone with me. So I brought a girlfriend of mine to the Bahamas with me. We were able to stay in the hotel room together and I used some free points for air so that she can fly out during a wind down from the working time. While I was working from the normal 9 to 5, she was at the hotel using their amenities and checking in the site. And then the moment that I was done at 5 o'clock, then it was just girlfriend time, GNO, girls night out, that type of thing.
Well, she got some benefits.
Yeah. I think she had a better time than I did.
Anything else that you really need to know or do before that business trip that you know you're going to have some pleasure on?
Yes. The second thing is to extend your trip. Now, while traveling for work, if you're at a convention or in a conference, you can ask if you need to arrive a few days beforehand, or you can set it up where you stay a couple of days after. Whether or not that's the case, a few days on the beginning or at the end of your travel, you can turn that into your leisure travel time, your mini vacation, your bizcation. While you don't have to use any vacation days, that's the best part about it. Because if you get that time and you know that you're going in and your travel policy allows you to do it, not only are you still there for work, but you're traveling for work, you're traveling on your company's dime, and you're not using any of your vacation days because you can extend it out.
I think I'd rather do the back end because I think if I had too much fun, I'm not going to want to work. The only extension I need on the front end for myself is just to have a little downtime so you can, especially if it's a long flight, you want to recover from that flight and be refreshed. Mm-hmm. I hate having to go on a business trip and the minute you hit the ground, your feet are moving and you don't even get a chance to decide which way is up.
And that's exactly, and that's where you can maximize off of that to stretch out and to extend your trip, because a lot of the times your boss or your employer want you to go in a couple of days beforehand to set up and a couple of days afterwards because you don't want to hit the ground running. So you can maximize off of that and still utilize that those resources and still actually for work. And I actually have one quick tip with this one, tipping you in the right direction. If you are going to extend your trip, It is all, and you're staying at the hotel. One of the suggestions is, because you're going to extend your trip and you're paying for that nominal expense out of your own pocket, when you check in for work, let the hotel know that you have a reservation at that same hotel. I always suggest staying at the same hotel if you're going to extend your trip for a couple of reasons. The main one is you're already there at the hotel. Tell them that you have a second reservation after your work reservation ends and request to stay in the same room.
So right.
You're not moving out your luggage, your work stuff, and any other things that you have. The only hassle that you may have to do is the day that your work reservation ends, it's just to go downstairs and check out and check in. And then some hotels now have where you can do that on the computer with your television.
Yeah, or on the television. Exactly.
But just make sure you let them know upon check-in that you actually do have a second reservation.
One of the other things that you have to be careful with that on as well is when you're making that reservation to extend your time at that same hotel is to make sure you're booking the same room category, because if not, they may say, well, no, you do have to check out. Whether you're going up or down, it doesn't matter.
Nobody
minds checking out if you've got to go upgrade.
Yes. It's a suite. I'll be out in 2 seconds.
Yeah. But you can sometimes use it as leverage. So even if you book something that is a lesser category than what your company books you for, especially if the company has a good relationship with the hotel, you can use that as leverage and give them a little nice talk and they may say, okay, keep the room.
Keep the room. Exactly. I love that tip. Yes.
Yeah.
Perfect. So the other one that I have, I like to call it hubba hubba. I don't mean when you're seeing your husband and you go hubba hubba.
Ooh, hubba hubba.
I mean hubba hubba. If you are traveling on business, especially internationally, use that designation as a hub to travel someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you're traveling to London, you can either hop on a flight or hop on the Eurostar, which is a high-speed train, and in 2 hours you can be in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Now, either you can spend a couple of days there. So that right there is one of the best things because a couple of things with that is you're not spending international air, and then you're already over there. The only thing that you're doing is buying a round trip a train ticket, especially if you're on the Eurostar, and you can buy the ticket the day of travel. You don't have to pre-buy it. If you want to, you can, but you don't have to, because that's a hub. London is a hub for almost every international European city or country that's over there. Wait until you get there and just take a dart and throw it at the map and say, this is where you want to go.
Right. The other thing that you can take into consideration is whatever airline you're booking. Each airline has its own hub, and that's where their flights go in and out of. It's kind of like the spoke of their it's kind of like the center of that wheel for them.
That's true.
And so wherever that airline hub is, because that will save you too. If you book a fare that allows for a free stopover, then that means, let's say if you're going from the United States to Paris and the hub for that carrier is London and you book a fare that allows a stopover, then you can stop over in London on that same ticket and it's not going to cost you any more. And then you can still use that same ticket and fly to Paris. So it's kind of like extending that stopover.
Exactly. That's a perfect segue to what I like to say is layovers are a good thing. Now, let me explain why I say that exactly to what you're saying. If you have an itinerary and you're going from New York to, I'm going domestically, if you're going from New York to Arizona and you have a layover, a couple hours layover in Baltimore, you can actually take a train from Baltimore into Washington, D.C. to see our nation's capital.
Yeah.
It's only an hour. The MARC train is nominal. Again, you can buy a ticket. You don't even have to hop on a plane.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy a ticket, go into our nation's capital, go on a guided walking tour, do a tour of the White House if you can, see our Nationals Mall, just enjoy actually Washington, D.C. if you have a huge hour layover, and then hop back on the MARC train, go back to Baltimore, and then fly home because you're already there for that layover. Who wants to sit at an airport for hours on end,
even if you have the
lounge pass can only do so much. You know what
I mean? Yeah, you're still in that same room.
Exactly.
But I do want to say something here because we're using some terminology, and I always like to keep the audience in the know because the more educated you are, the better consumer you are. And so we've used several terms here, layover and stopover. And there is a difference when you're talking about the rules of the fare that you have on that airline ticket. So a layover is that time that you're at the destination or at that intermediate point based on that airline's connection time, mm-hmm. and it can be 2 hours, it could be 5 or 6 hours, depending on that airline's schedule,
but
it's not going to cost you any more, but it's not overnight. If it becomes overnight, it's then a stopover. And mm-hmm. that can sometimes change the fare of the ticket, but it's a lot less than having to buy separate tickets.
Mm-hmm.
So remember that, folks. Layover, stopover.
Correct.
So layover is an extended connection,
mm-hmm.
and a stopover is typically more than 24 hours
and overnight.
Yeah, I just wanted to impart that.
Thank you. We're using that
terminology.
And that's good to know, especially with our listeners and knowing the terminology. So the more you know, the more you can go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the more you can go. Yes. And one of the other things that I have that I love is always be the weekend warrior. When you have some downtime and you're here on the weekends, a lot of the times people just, when they're working 9 to 5, they hop in their car and they're just a weekend warrior and you don't see them anymore. Now, what I mean by being the weekend warrior in reference to travel is concerned when you're on a business trip is if you're traveling on business and you're traveling like a Monday through Thursday and your trip or your work schedule ends towards the end of the week, you can check with your employer to see if you have to be there for the weekend. So if you're going in on a Monday and you don't start work until Tuesday and it ends on a Thursday, if they need for you to be there on the weekend to break down, to follow up with clients and meetings and things of that nature, see if they need you there for the weekend. Because if they don't need you there for the weekend and they say that you're needed for that Thursday, then you can take that time to enjoy yourself and wind down for the weekend.
Yeah, and even if they don't need you for that weekend, you can just see if you can book your ticket early. It's not going to cost the company anything more, and the weekend is yours anyway, and you can take advantage of that time. You know, Morel, there's one thing that I wanted to talk about, because it's being an entrepreneur, I know that it becomes very difficult to take vacations. And oftentimes it's because we either can't afford it or we don't have the staff or the time to get away. Because as a small company, a lot of times you don't have that big staff. But it's much, much needed relief, especially for a small business mm-hmm. owner or mm-hmm. entrepreneur. So I wanted to talk about working on vacation
mm-hmm.
and giving you that incentive to take that vacation, or even if you're traveling with your family on vacation but you need to get some work done. There are just some tips and things that you want to follow. One of the things is to get your clients familiar with your proxies. For example, when you can be reached,
mm-hmm.
when you're going to set aside some time to work and mm-hmm. be available to them, and how available you're going to be, what constitutes an emergency,
mm-hmm.
what constitutes wait until that time and I will communicate with you. Because you just don't want to have, of course you have that auto response email that says I'm away,
I have
limited contact or access to this or that,
mm-hmm.
but you also want to have those conversations, especially with those important clients
mm-hmm.
or the ones that you're currently working with. And the other thing that you want to do is the same thing with your family. Let them know, I'm going to have to work. And so every day during this period, I'm going to allocate a couple of hours to work.
Mm-hmm.
Then that way your family isn't off having a vacation without you. Because guess what? They want you to be part of the vacation
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whether you spend first thing in the morning, that way then you're off and running. Once you're done with
mm-hmm.
that, you're done with
mm-hmm.
that. And certainly today what helps is your smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
And so for emergencies, people can always contact you
mm-hmm.
there. But I always say set aside that time that you're going to work on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
You also want to make sure you're picking the right places that you'll have access to Wi-Fi. It's not a time where you want to be off the grid
mm-hmm.
if you're going to need to have a working vacation. And a little bit more questions, because sometimes a hotel or resort will say Wi-Fi access, but maybe that Wi-Fi access is only in remote areas, or you're walking around trying to find
a
signal.
Yes.
And what kind of signal they have in the room, or
mm-hmm.
do they have a business center, those kind
mm-hmm.
of things. So planning ahead of time for that working vacation
mm-hmm.
is very important, so that you can accomplish the things that you want to do. But I say don't let it be a deterrent as to whether or not you take that vacation. It is much needed.
Exactly.
You just manage it
mm-hmm.
and you plan it and you have a great time.
That is true.
It's very, very important.
That is true. I call that it's a family affair. Absolutely, that is so true.
Yeah. Now, there's another thing, especially, again, if you're an entrepreneur or small business owner, even if you're employed, you want to know what kind of expenses, tax deductions, mm-hmm. you want to know what you can write off, what is a true expense for you and what isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some rules that you can use. And you kind of, you said weekend warrior.
Mm-hmm.
There's something else that you can consider, and it's called the sandwich day rule. And this is with the IRS.
Oh, what's that?
The sandwich day rule, just think of a sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
You have two pieces of bread and something in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the work in the middle. And so let's say if you get there on a Monday, but you have Tuesday off, and then you're working again Wednesday,
mm-hmm.
there's still time that you can write off and expenses that you can write off for Tuesday,
mm-hmm.
because you're not going over a certain percentage of leisure time.
Okay.
And it's sandwiched between two work days.
Got it.
You had no other choice,
yes.
but to be there during
mm-hmm.
that time. So think of the sandwich rule and maybe look that up and get more information on what those rules are. But, yeah, there are some rules that are in place to
mm-hmm.
help you with those guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
Side trips are not deductible. So you want to make sure that any non-business or personal destination that you're en route to, when you talked about the layover
mm-hmm.
and all of that, so your side trips are not deductible, but what you want to do is look at some of your expenses, because if you're away,
mm-hmm.
then you have no choice but to spend money.
Exactly.
So some of those expenses
mm-hmm.
related to a side trip or those extra days that you're spending
mm-hmm.
will be deductible, unless it's just a flat-out vacation
mm-hmm.
time after
mm-hmm.
that. And in some cases, it's 25% deductible. Sometimes it's 50%.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's as much as 75%, depending on if it's a domestic trip or an international
mm-hmm.
trip. So there is a lot of relief and deductions that you can take for travel expenses
mm-hmm.
when you are getting a little pleasure
yeah.
out of that business trip. So check it out. When you're talking to your accountant, should know.
Mm-hmm.
If not, you can go on the IRS website and put in travel expenses
mm-hmm.
and put in that sandwich rule.
Mm, yes, yes. I like that sandwich rule.
Now, Morel, we have determined what we're doing. We're on a bizcation, as you called it earlier.
Mm-hmm.
We've mixed in a little business and pleasure. What do we do afterwards? What are some post-travel tips?
The post-travel tips, I have three. Reconnect, reconcile, and reengage. I just have those three things. Now, that you can do these three things whether you're going for work or whether you're traveling on work and you have your family coming.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one is to reconnect. So the first one is to reconnect. After being out of the office for extended period of time, come back and reconnect with the people that took your proxy, that took your place when you were out of the office. You want to get reacclimated. You want to make sure that that for the most part you do not plan any meetings on your first day back. You just want to make sure that it is just you, you're checking your email, checking your voicemail, and that is it. My tipping you in the right direction for this is your very first day back in the office is to extend your voicemail and your email out of office for that same day.
Uh-huh.
That way people think that you're still out of the office and you're getting reacclimated and nobody knows that you're there, but you're taking your time out to handle your business back in the office, getting back on your regular work schedule, including lunches and breaks.
Right, yeah, because when that day everybody knows that you're back,
mm-hmm.
they're bombarding.
Exactly.
And they want answers now
exactly.
on everything that they sent
mm-hmm.
you for the whole week that
mm-hmm.
you were out.
Even though you've been reconnected with them
right.
during the week via email or social media,
it's different.
It's different
yeah.
when you come back. They want to sit on your desk and talk to you around the water cooler. You don't have time for that.
It's a great tip.
Mm-hmm. The second tip is to reconcile. You need to do that both for work and then for your leisure. So what I mean by that is to make sure that you keep your business expenses and your personal expenses separate. From everything from hotels to taxis to car rentals, meals, and entertainment, you want to make sure you keep those two expenses separate so that when you get back into the office, you can reconcile your business report and your personal report. I have another tipping you in the right direction. Keep two separate envelopes when you're traveling and label one for business and one for leisure. And during your work and during your trip, during your work hours, keep your business envelope with you. And every time you buy something, you purchase something, you stick it in an envelope. And you do the same when when you come back home and you clock out at 5 and 5:01, you put down your business envelope and you pick up your leisure envelope and you do the same thing for that for your leisure receipts. And the way to keep it in order and in track is to put the most recent on front. And lastly, the last one is to re-engage. You want to make sure that this is different from reconnecting. You want to make sure you get re-engaged back into your everyday home life and work life. So for example, for picking up a new work project at work, reconnecting with your staff, taking them out to lunch. And the same with family, too. If you didn't travel with your family and you're alone, you're one of two principals that were missing. So your family had to come up with a brand new normal while you weren't there. So now you have to come back home. You have to get reacclimated into absolutely everything that they're doing into the regular routine. So my suggestion for that is before you leave for your home, and your family, to actually plan a family night or a date night. So while you're gone, they have something to look forward to when you get back home. That will be a much easier transition for you to get back into the basic routine of family.
Morel, thank you so much for those great tips.
You're welcome.
You can get tips and information that Morel and I gave you today on the website and on our blogs. Fees, and more fees. There's an under-the-radar fee that the resort industry has been charging since the 90s. It's typically not advertised and is added on to the final bill. I'm talking about the resort fee. Since it's often stated after the fact or in very small print, I wanted to know if it was noticed and if people knew what it was and why it was charged. China Rory, Traveling Culturati's correspondent, took to the streets.
Hi, do you know what a resort fee is?
Yes, I've heard of a resort fee.
Have you ever been charged a resort fee?
Yes, I have been charged a resort fee. I think I was in Florida when I was charged a fee. And I didn't like it because the resort fees are usually to do upkeep of, like, in the beach area or the area which the place that you're staying is. And it can also be for a rental of... if you're gonna go out sunning, they have things that you can lay on and blankets and all kinds of stuff. But I don't use any of that, so I'm paying for stuff I'm not even gonna use. So.
That's partially correct.
Yes, actually, I was recently looking into going to a conference in Las Vegas and found that they charge that in addition to the very high hotel room fee. I'm very cheap. So I tend not to stay in places that would charge something like that if I have a choice. I've never actually paid that.
While it originated at more high-end resorts, you can find them at lower-end facilities too.
It's probably something for some sort of resort or hotel out in some tropical place.
No, that's not entirely true. You will find resort fees more often charged at beach resorts, but you can find them at city and ski properties as well.
I've only heard of timeshare fees, but I don't know what a resort fee is.
It's a fee associated with staying at that particular resort.
It's probably a fee, like, depending on how many nights you stay.
A resort fee, when charged, is a mandatory fee. It's added on per room per night and can range from as little as $3.50 per night to as much as $60 per night. However, while the rate is per room, some of the inclusions may be good for only one or two people, like a complimentary drink or access to the fitness center. So the third or fourth person is just, well, out of luck. And yes, I said complimentary. They like to say that, but in fact, you're paying for it, just not for everyone. The perks included in fees vary by resort, but some of the typical inclusions are resort amenities like Wi-Fi, newspaper, in-room coffee and tea. I recently stayed at the Sheraton Kona, Hawaii, and the resort fee included lei-making classes, Hawaiian cultural education, ukulele lessons, and a guided resort walk, among other things. And as I mentioned earlier, they are not part of the advertised rate. Therefore, you probably won't see it until you make your selection online, and it's quoted along with the taxes, or in very small print. On your hotel bill, you'll see it as a nightly charge when you check out. And remember, I said the resort fee is mostly mandatory, so you probably won't be able to opt out of it, whether you use the amenities or not. Now you are in the know about resort fees. Thank you, China. When we come back, I've got the Culture Report. For more information on today's show, visit the website, TravelingCulturati.com. I'm Javon Harley with the Traveling Culturati on HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. Welcome back to the Traveling Culturati on HUR Voices. I'm Javon Harley. Don't forget to visit the website, TravelingCulturati.com. There you can find all sorts of things, like the Traveling Culturati blog, travel tips, and you can join the travel club.
One, two,
This week's Culture Report is shining a spotlight on New Orleans. New Orleans is a multicultural city, and one culture that has made a big impact and shaped the city is the Black culture. From slavery to present day, the influences are undeniable. The people, the music, the food, and so much more. To help me explore the rich history is Carol Bevel, co-founder and executive director of Ashe Cultural Arts Center in New Orleans. Hello, Carol, and welcome to the Traveling Culturati.
How are you?
I am fantastic. Now, Carol is a native New Orlean, an educator, and a published poet whose works include In a Manner of Speaking, From a Bend in the River, and Sisters Together. I'm so excited about those. I want to know so much more about the Ashe Cultural Center in New Orleans.
Sure. Well, Ashe is 17, going on 18 years old, so if in human life, we're moving toward adulthood as an institution. And our mission calls us to use the forces of culture and art as strategies for doing human, community, and economic development. We're located in Central City, which is the hood in New Orleans. It's right in the middle of the city, and it's the place that has been full of the problems that come with communities that have lots of folks with low wealth and have a large number of people of color in it. Part of our work has been about being an influence for the evolution of that community to a higher level quality of life.
Can you tell me a little bit more about your published poetry?
One of my newer works is a tribute I've done to the city. Called My Dear New Orleans, a piece that was done for NPR not long after the disaster. We were asked to write a letter to New Orleans, and so it was really a lot about what we'd been through and what was ahead, and what was it that kind of anchored me in my commitment to want to live here and die here.
So let's talk about the history of Africans in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the beginning in New Orleans is 300 years ago. The city's going to be 300 years old in 2018, I think it is. So the tribute at that time will be full of veiled references and very direct references to the imprint that can be found of Africans from West Africa, mostly from Haiti and from places in Latin America where people of African descent had also been brought. And so their imprint is all over New Orleans. We have one of the places that always pops up is Congo Square, which is a place where Africans, enslaved Africans, were allowed on Sunday to gather. What was so refreshing about that was that it was an opportunity to once again step out of the oppressive role of being enslaved and to once again dance and drum and to speak your own language and to potentially find other people who might have been, you know, close to where it is that you were, and to exchange goods and food and to essentially fill yourself with sustenance to be able to make another rough week until you can once again gather in Congo Square. And so that place is here. It has been put on the registry. And to this day, thanks to the Congo Square Preservation Society, on Sundays from 3 to 5, you can go there and drumming is happening. And that's been going on now for about the last 15 years. That's one of the places that you can find the imprint. When you look at the ironwork in New Orleans, this is yet another place. So the iron workers, this was a skill that was also brought by virtue of the enslaved Africans. And interestingly enough, very much like the quilts that were in plain sight, you can find many Adinkran symbols that are throughout the city in the wrought iron, which was put there by again, you know, Africans who are doing iron work here.
Right. Now, I've seen the iron works.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think the Adinkra symbols were something that I missed. I didn't necessarily see that reference.
You see a heart, and it's not until you look at the, you know, do a little research and discover that the heart is also a Sankofa symbol.
Oh.
You know, and there are bunches of symbols that show up in Western thought in a certain way, but show up in African thought in a different way.
Right. And I think it's very important to point out that when we look at African